Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Barca for All podcast. We are back for another episode. I'm not sure which number this is. I don't really keep track of that. Over on my side, it's more of like the Rajesh sort of social media management side of it. But we are back to talk about, as usual, FC Barcelona Femení. And I am joined only today by Borja, as Rajesh has to work. Me and Borja don't know what that's like. Oh well, I did yesterday, but it's only part-time for right now. Borja, how are you doing, my fellow unemployed friend?
Hi, it's funny because actually I'm unemployed since last week, so
very
accurate from you. No, but it was...
Make me feel better.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, I'm pretty happy actually because first I have not to work and that brings me joy every day, not having to wake up at 7 a.m. But besides that, because Patrick Jarro renewed for Barcelona until 2027,
and
that
makes
me extremely happy because she's one of my, she's my favorite player, right? She's also favorite player of nearly everyone that knows a little bit of ball. So yeah.
Thank you for that lovely transition into what we're talking about. Very helpful. So, Patri has renewed until 2027. That is incredible news for us. Arguably our most important renewal. I mean, it's kind of hard to compare the renewals of... I mean, who else is up? I think both Alexia and Aitana are both up, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, Alexia has to renew, but Aitana has 1 year left still.
Okay, she has 1 year left. I know there's like a full long list of players that need to renew, which will definitely be our biggest challenge coming up in the next calendar year. But Patri obviously is probably, I would say right now she's our most important player. I mean, obviously it's a very close comparison between her and the others, but... She has, for me, I think she's the best player in the world right now. Sorry. I do think she is. It's a close second between her and Aitana. Very close second. But I do think she's the best player in the world right now. It would have been really bad if we didn't renew her. I'm not giving... It's hard to give a constructive sort of thought to this because up front, it's just like our best player renewed for us. That's great. Probably the thing that we can give a more constructive thought on is something that may be a hurdle for our next contract negotiations, which is the fact that our sporting director has left the club. Markel Zubizarreta, if I pronounced that right, which I think I did, has left the club. He left, I want to say, a week ago. I believe effective immediately. I'm not quite sure what position he's taking. Oh, right. I think he's taking up the Spanish Federation sporting director position, if I'm not mistaken.
Apparently... He's just having conversations with the Spanish Federation. So
okay,
there's
so
not like
some.
Yeah, apparently neither Barcelona, neither Markel closed anything before Markel left. So there is like, Markel has not started a new job and Barcelona has not signed any sport director yet.
Which is so great. And that was said with a lot of sarcasm in my voice because it's like not great. Because of all of the contract negotiations that will still have to happen with someone that these agents are not particularly used to, I assume. I don't know if there's any... I haven't seen any rumors of who will replace them, or him, I should say. I don't know. I don't want to say he's irreplaceable, but he's done incredible work in the half decade he's been here. I believe he's been in his position since 2017. And I believe he one of his first signings was Lika Martins.
Yeah, it was. I can recall. I don't know if she was, he was 1 year before 2017, but anyway, he started, and since he became a sport director, Barca got to start to grow. I don't know if you wanted to talk about the reasons why Mark left. That's not info coming from neither of us. But
yeah, we don't have exclusives or anything. I mean, he's been at odds with the board for a while.
Yep.
There have been like reports that have come out here and there of like, he will leave now. Like last year there was a whole thing of like, he is going to leave soon. And everyone was like, whatever, because he didn't leave. Citing like personal conflicts that he had with the higher ups in the club. What other reasons have there been?
Yeah, the thing anyway, yes, I wanted just to make like a flashback. Back in 2021,
yeah,
he also threat with resigning.
Do you
remember when this thing that Barcelona players asked it to get rid of Lluís Cortés? So basically, Markel, I'm sorry if I said with strong words in English, but I'm just trying to.
No, I mean, because that's what's happened. That might have reacted that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And actually, kind of. Yeah, that's what happened.
So messy. If we had this podcast back then, we would have been so messy about it.
Yeah, but the thing is that back in 2021, Markel also threatened with resigning because she was on the side of the players, and he said that the positions of Juiz and the players were not going to match, and there was no chance of going back. So if Juiz was not sacked or whatever, he would have resigned, and he was on the he also had to renew. I mean, Markel in that June of 2021. So that's no news that Markel like wants to threat with resigning in order to be heard and in order to have his opinion on the table. But anyway, the reasons come from this season, basically. He didn't like this is according to Catalonia Radio by Ruth Vila. So if anyone wants to check it out more completely, you can go there and just read it.
Are they reliable?
Yeah, absolutely reliable. Yeah. I think Laia Brans in El Periódico also highlighted some of the very same topics. So the first one was that Jesse Engelhardt was fired by someone in the presidency of Barcelona.
Who was fired?
Jesse Engelhardt, who actually was the right hand of Markel. Yeah, she was actually like hired 1 year ago. They were very happy with her. And from Azaden, she was fired.
I do remember I think that's what I was talking about when he, like last year, there was drama because he was supposed to resign because of her leaving the club.
That was approximately in April this year.
Mm-hmm. That was that recent?
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking like last season. Okay, I see.
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons. And apparently, he was very upset with that decision because he was very happy with her as a teammate. He didn't like the fact that the former Barcelona, delegado, I don't know how to say in English.
Predecessor?
No, is the person which is in charge of the teams, the players that are sanctioned and that can play in the next the equivalent to Carlos Naval on the first team.
I don't know what that title would be.
I'm finding it hard.
I don't know if we have a word for that. I'm sure we do, but like,
yeah,
so I don't know if I'd recognize it. Can you type it out? Delegate.
Delegate, yeah. Okay, so that's a way.
Sorry, I think I heard like
Yeah, so basically, Barca, sorry, Merkel didn't like neither the fact that the former delegate, which until 2021, Gonzalo, was transferred to the men's team. And actually, it's funny because he was fired this season. And actually, he was supposed to be the successor of Carlos Naval. And he didn't like that neither. Mm-hmm. There is also other reasons that there was very... very low autonomy within the sporting director of the women's team. Apparently, everyone went on their own, and Merkel didn't like that neither. And the fact that he is very methodic in his in how he works, and that he was supposed to change how he worked just because someone. Inside the Barca structure, I just wanted to change part of that methodology. He also had like a meeting in August with the new sport direction of the whole club, Deco, and so on. And he didn't like what he heard and what was discussed there. And that was a reason as well. And also the fact that the economic situation that led him to make some decisions that he didn't want to make and that we can. The team, and I am thinking of probably AMC leaving.
Probably. Because we let like her that. Go very late into the transfer window.
Yeah, and actually, it seems very obvious that it was just a fair play decision that had to be made in order to fulfill La Liga requirements from the men's team.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that I think we've mentioned, the fact that the fair play of the women's team influences on the fair play of the men's team, like the other Barca sections. So yeah, and basically that he expected that to be worse. So in the end, it's like he didn't want it. So basically, apparently the most likely successor would be Domènec Guas, which is a former employee of Barca who was in charge of the academies in the US. And he's been working with Merkel since Jesse Engelhardt left. So he's been a few months working alongside Merkel, and he's the mostly likely to be hired as his replacement, but nothing official, and it's just a rumor. So that's basically the reasons why Merkel left. And, mm-hmm. and yeah, and I agree with everything you said about it will be complicated. In the end, you miss someone who has been in charge for many years, who got to know all the agents and got to know very well the market and all the details of the women's team.
Right.
I think we are all hoping that we get a profile that is very specialized on women's football and not just a very good sport director, but that doesn't have any background on women's football.
Right. My main concern when this news dropped is that the person that would end up replacing him would be like another one of Laporta's friends, which I don't really think is that far out of a prediction. I'm glad that like it's someone who it seems to be someone that will replace him that has had experience with the women's sporting market and everything like that. But in a general sense of like the club's direction and the hiring process of these people that are admittedly Laporta's friends, I was worried about that. Do we know anything about this Domènec guy?
Like anything not really
else, what you said.
I mean, like I just kind of went into his LinkedIn. A bit of weird, right? Like a bit of a stalker. That's
really fun. No, don't worry about it. I do it sometimes too.
Okay, I feel better now. But in the end, he has background as a coach, and like he has all the license, so he knows actually football. Because I found people believing that the sport direction is more of a management thing when mm-hmm. actually you need to know like a lot of football in order to make decisions. Of course, you need to know law and in some way economics in order to management. But I think the main focus is football. I think he's also graduated in the university. I can't recall the degree, but he seemed prepared. The thing is, he's enough prepared to be the sport director of the first team of the best women's football in the world.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really think that experience is a big thing in these kind of jobs. So I don't know. Obviously, the sport direction department is bigger than just Markel. And I mean, like I know for at least for six people working there as scouters and just in administrative decisions, in positions, sorry. So hopefully they will make whoever comes in easier the decisions and the first months. I can think of other names, but I just rumors and just my opinions on someone that probably Barca should have in mind, but it's just my two cents that worth nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, if you want to like list them off really quick, is there anyone that I would know?
I mean, yeah. Ruth Vila. No, sorry. Ruth Vila was the journal that I mentioned. Ruth García. You know that. You know her.
Yeah.
Former Barcelona player and she's been working in Levante.
Really?
Sporting direction. Yeah. And actually with good results because the recruitment from Levante has been pretty good, right? Like Maider Ramirez. And yeah, I mean,
you know, like, who do I like to look at? I don't want to take this person from this club. But whoever Madrid CFF's sporting director is.
Yeah, that's another one. Like I mean, like probably if you are looking for a sport director that has experience on women's football, probably you want to go for teams that have been proved to have a very good recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Madrid CFF, I mentioned Levante, and probably Wolfsburg has a very good recruitment.
You think so?
I mean,
from the lower levels, yeah.
They find very young players and they develop them.
They do. That is their specialty.
And apparently, what Barcelona has been made in recent times with, I don't know, with Barça B, for instance, and Vicky, Julia Dragoni, etc. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It depends.
I was more thinking about, like, they haven't been able to find any good defenders for this long.
But maybe because there are no German defenders good enough.
Ooh, drama. Interesting take there, Borja. I hope no one really takes that to heart. do we want to like take just a minute to reflect on his legacy? Because I mean, obviously the work he's done has ushered the team into from sort of a maybe top 10 team in Europe in 2017, top 5 maybe if you want to push it, into multiple times Champions League winners in less than 10 years. So we know his work is important, arguably the most important person at the club in that time span in for the women's section. But there has been some times, maybe, where he's kind of lost the plot. I still am remembering his role in the Gio situation, which has always, ever since that happened, put a sour taste in my mouth. How much are we losing out on and how irreplaceable is he truly?
I just wanted to add, I mean, you mentioned Gio and I wanted to add Leirelanda, which also left the club in strange circumstances and apparently, actually, she sent a supportive message to Gio. So probably she's being familiar with...
I don't remember that. When did she leave the club? Like 2016? No,
2017. I can't
2017.
2018.
Yeah.
She was injured and she left in a very weird way. I mean, like, you can tell also from Falcon and Andrea Pereira, but that's probably more related to the fair play situation that we just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing with Leirelanda is probably closer to Gio. I don't know. It wasn't never official or anything public. But
right.
Yeah, but the player was neither happy with how she was treated or how she was sent off. So yeah, I mean, those two cases are just a negative parts of her legacy, but I think the rest of it is pretty good.
I think in the last 2 years, I've definitely been more critical of him.
Yeah.
I mean, signing like players like Vicky, Salma, Esme, who else? Oh, Ona, obviously. Those have all been great, but I feel like there has also been some also equally bad with the equally great. And I like every decision that he's made, I understand it, but I don't necessarily agree with it. Like certain renewals, certain signings, I'm sure we can fill in the blanks, audience.
The thing there is we are judging Markel for decisions that probably doesn't come from him directly, or he's bound to make in order to keep other players and sustain certain, I mean, like, as Barça gets more professional and more equivalent to the men's team, in the probably you will get some decisions that you are not very, how to say that? I mean, like, there is agents that probably want you to, I am just trying to avoid to say certain agency names and players' names in order not to mess it up.
There are certain agents that we shall not name that start with U.
I didn't say that. But in the end,
say it. Maybe you can't, but I can.
No, but in the end, it's not just unique. There is also other agency that kind of goes in the same way. So in the end, it's maybe you have to make some decisions because the agency has many players or has a particular player with a lot of leverage within the dressing room, or that is very important to the team, and probably you have to accept other players being renewed that probably you don't like, or probably you have to let some players leave that you don't want to do, but you are bound for fair play as we mentioned, or other
reasons. That's everywhere. That's every club.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, when we mentioned the good things about Markel, also we should give some credit to the rest of the scoutings, that are on the women's team. And I don't know, we'll judge on long term whoever comes, how he makes in comparison. I don't know, maybe in 10 years we are just blaming Markel for not signing Linda Caicedo, for instance. I don't know.
I mean, I already did that, so.
Yeah, sure, right. But I don't know. It will be, I think it will take some years in order to properly value what Markel did. There is also something, another thing, that in this stage of the women's football, you don't have that much competitors in order to sign certain players.
Like,
there are like probably five teams that you are competing with.
Unless you are Mary Earps.
Yeah, right. But in that context,
allegedly,
it's probably easier to make good decisions because you don't have to. I mean, you have not got that many competitors. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
I think that's good then for our segment about Marco leaving the club. Yeah, we definitely have a lot of contracts still to negotiate. I'm pretty sure either the club or someone close to the club said that it shouldn't be like an issue to negotiate those contracts that still remain.
We mentioned Patrick as being close, and in Catalonia,
right, yeah,
they also say that Alexis was very close.
Arguably our most important renovation to have, and we did it. So something must be doing good. Like we must be on something of a right track. So I'm personally not too worried about it. It's a little sus the way that he left, but I don't know. It should be fine. So that's pretty much all for like news. After this, we can get into both of the games that have happened since we last recorded an episode. First one is our match against Huelva. I need to pull it up real quick. I've been looking at the script for a minute. We won against Huelva 2-1. We scored two goals, one from Claudia Pina and another one from an own goal in the 92nd minute from Ana Carolina from Brasil. And then In the 96th minute, Laia Ballesté, who I wrote the English Wikipedia page for, she scored a pretty good goal in the 96th minute. I already said that. To make the score end 1-2. This was also an away game, so it was in their stadium. I want to say my first thought overall about the game is that Chelsea Ashurst had an incredible game. Aside from the penalty that she conceded, she did end up saving the penalty, which I don't know if, Borja, you want to get into the referee decisions involving that penalty, but she was great. I thought she did everything she could to get a point from Barcelona, but, you know, an own goal is an own goal. You can't really do much about it. I'd also want us to talk about the performances of Vicky Lopez and Esme Brooks. Both were just incredible. I thought they did really well, especially Esme in that new left-back position. Also, maybe talk about, briefly, we don't have to get too much into it again, but about the Panos-Cata situation, because Panos started this game. We were wondering if they were going to alternate. Panos started this game. We'll also see later that she started the game against Valencia, so we don't know what the deal is with that yet. But yeah, I want to hear your thoughts more in depth. We can start with the performance of Vicky Lopez.
I really like, I think probably was the best player that day. I mean, she didn't play full 90 minutes, but I think it was the main player that allowed Barcelona to progress. And she was very easily found on the pockets because she moved very well, finding the right lanes in order to get a pass, and the fact that she turned very easily and then could just pass, make the right pass to Caro, who was on advantage, or Bruna. I think it was what made the main difference. Also, Caro on the right wing, she generated a lot and was the main focus. But in the end, Vicky was the main player in order to progress, because actually playing at the same time with Torrejón as center back, Lucy Brons as a right back, and Engen, I think Barcelona missed a lot of ability on the ball in order to progress and finding Vicky and Pina more often between the lines. She could be found more often, but the times that she was found, I think she made a difference. So, pretty happy with Vicky, and the fact that she's grown physically this season, and the fact that she's having more impact. I think she will grow even more during the season, and at the end of the season, we might talk about Vicky Lopez being a starter for many, many matches. I'm probably just looking in the next season for a bigger role than that she's having. So, I think it's a very promising from her and for the rest of the season.
I didn't even mention this, but we talked a little bit about the lineup that we had. Engen, Torre, and Lucy Bronze all started, which was very interesting. Jona is just doing whatever he wants out there. He is just experimenting. He is putting people on a piece of paper and saying, go out there and play football. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if a win is a win. But I think a common observation that we had, me and Borja had, when we were preparing to talk about stuff in the podcast, was that this game was pretty boring in the sense that, well, at least for me, from my perspective, in the sense that it was just sort of like a mishmash of players. Not too much happened. There wasn't any intense counterattacking, which isn't what I would come to expect from an away match against Huelva. So take this with a grain of salt. But it really does just seem that Jona is just listing people and saying go.
Yeah, I think it was very boring, but I think it was very boring also, obviously, due to how Sporting de Huelva defended, but also because Barcelona's structure and a set of players that were used. We have mentioned the Engen, Torrejón, and Bruns. That triangle on the right that was not very helpful in order to progress. For instance, right. Sporting de Huelva was playing a 5-3-2. So there you have many, 5-2-3. So you have many chances to find a player on the sides of the double pivot and then progress. And the players couldn't do it because, again, for instance, for long balls doesn't have that much ability and neither Torre. So, and in order just to find him, as I said, Vicky on the pocket, there was not that much. There was not much ability in the end. But also on the left, it's probably something that we are going to talk about. I didn't dislike Esme's performance particularly, but I think that she playing as a left back, which makes her, she and Rolfong, whoever plays as a left back, to be very close to the left line.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's very right-footed. We saw that during the World Cup. That whenever she receives on the ball, she mostly tends to drift inwards instead of dribbling by the outside. And that, I think that prevents Barcelona from having more danger. Like Ona can do it and Rolfo can do it, especially Rolfo can do it, which is dribbling on the outside and then going to the to the last third and then, I don't know, produce something. But Esme doesn't tend to do that, and I think the most dangerous situations from Esme came from actually coming from inside and then attacking the back of the defense. So, as I said, I didn't dislike Esme's performance, but I think she needs to get better in that sense, because when she has played in other positions in Barcelona, she's produced more than in than against Sporting de Huelva playing as a left back. Do you like Esme's performance or?
I started this saying that I thought she was great, which I do. I think she's great in the sense that, like, she's not seamlessly, but she fits in very well for the Rolfo role, especially considering the circumstances of, I don't really think she goes that deep. I didn't really watch her when she was at PSV. But I'm impressed by her ability to adapt so well. And I also had this observation during the Valencia match yesterday, which is that she has already seemed to have really begun to understand how Barcelona play. She's begun to perfect the one-touch pass. She seems to, like, have a good sense of positional awareness of where, you know, players like Claudia are going to be, players like Alexia are going to be. So I think in that sense, she, more than anything, she blended in, which is just exactly what I want from a player. They don't need to do a bunch of stuff to stand out to me. They just need to fit in within the system.
Yeah, and the thing with Esme is that I very much agree with everything you mentioned. She has actually the physical conditions because she has that ability to cover great distances. She's not super, super, super fast, but she's quite fast. But the thing is, when she plays, and actually there is one interview to one of her coaches this week in Relevo, which actually highlights that, the fact that she's been preparing to play more as a left back and cover more distances and so on. But the thing is, she's what I said at the beginning, she's very right-footed. Whenever she's played in other positions, for instance, against Valencia, she played as a right winger, and she created more danger in that position. But I think is in the end comes down just to the fact that she's not very confident with her left foot, you know, to execute technical actions. And at the moment that she gets better at it, like Ona Batlle did a few years back, she will produce in a very similar level play on the right, on the left. And I'm just waiting for that to happen. And hopefully Jonah and the rest of the team and on the rest of the staff helps her, you know, to do so. But once she does it, I think she will be very able to play in, playing as a left back or as a right or left winger.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. Do we want to talk about, I mean, I don't really know what else there is to talk about. Do we want to talk about Paños starting? Because we can also talk about her starting for the Valencia match.
As you want. I mean, I only have one thing to say. I think both have been great this start of the season.
Yeah.
The thing is that Cata started against Madrid CFF, which was kind of a big match because we lost against them last season. Then Paños played us against Sporting de Huelva and Valencia, which are not expected to be a very hard team to beat.
Right.
Let's put it in that words very politely. And then we have on Sunday against Real Sociedad. And if there is, and if it keeps this rotation, it will be Cata. And if she plays, she will have played for the two biggest rivals that we have played for the moment, and Paños for the weaker teams. So I don't know if there is a pattern there.
I
don't know if there is a pattern. We will see on the long term, but if that is, that's quite telling.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they both have been good, and this is just a general thing that I've been thinking about of, you know, how well can we judge these players based on how they perform against Huelva, Betis, Valencia, whatever. So maybe we can, it's definitely something to put a pin in until those matches are played, like the Real Madrid match, the Atleti match, the Real Sociedad match, the Levante match, even Champions League matches. But I didn't even notice that it seems like Paños is taking the weaker teams. I mean, if that's the arrangement, which is what it seems to be, I think that's a good thing. I mean, because it gives continuity to both of the players, at least enough continuity, because, I mean, how much continuity does a goalkeeper need? You do the same thing over and over, no offense. But Cata, I think it shows confidence in Cata while still maintaining Paños's, I would assume, her desire to start, because she is a captain, she's a very important player. That's interesting. Yeah, we'll definitely end up revisiting that. Maybe, I mean, is the next match week, you said it was Real Sociedad, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then after that is Atleti, and then a couple of weeks after that is Real Madrid in November. So, yeah, we will definitely see how that position is sorted out from there. Otherwise, I think we're good for talking about Huelva, unless you have anything else to add.
Yeah, I think we are good.
Okay, so after this, we can move on to Valencia. Probably, for me at least, there's a lot more to talk about here. We are able to see better the return of quote-unquote false nine Alexia. We were also able to see Onabatier's debut at the Estadio Johan Cruyff, and an interesting midfield type situation happening. The match, in just in review, was 2 own goals from Claudio Florentino, which I felt so bad about, because the second own goal was like a really good goal. It was kind of like, it wasn't quite Lyakhodina in the World Cup-esque, but it was a pretty good own goal. So 2 own goals from her within 20 minutes, actually within 12 minutes, which is just miserable. And then Aitana scored, Mapi scored, Alexia scored a penalty, and Marta Torrejón scored to make the final score 6-0. Sorry, Valencia. Those Valencia players were going through it. First, those 2 own goals, and then Alexia ripped a shot straight into, I think, their number 3, and then Marta Caro also got, like, just obliterated in the stomach. So they were having a difficult day. Otherwise, Barcelona did so good. But we can definitely get to talking about what that match was. It was a lot. I guess the first thing we can talk about, which is probably the most important thing, is false nine Alexia. We started with a midfield three of Patri, Aitana, and Mariona, which was interesting. On the team sheet, I thought the APA was back. That wasn't the case, because Alexia was starting where Mariona probably would usually have started. She started in, I guess, the false nine position. We have thoughts on it. They're not quite positive. Borja, you can start on that.
Yeah. First of all, I don't think she was playing as a false nine.
That's why I kept saying like sorta kinda, because her role in itself was not really a false nine.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. There is a huge discourse around Alexia playing as a nine, whether it's a good idea or not a good idea. First of all, I don't think the sample is big enough in order to judge. Even Giraldez probably has a bigger sample, because apparently she's been tried in trainings as a striker for a longer period. So probably no. He actually is the one who has the best info on it. In my view, for the moment, I think he's just trying to invest in that role in order to be a resource in the future for big games. Like, we saw Mariona playing as a false nine against Chelsea and against Wolfsburg in the final in the Champions League. And I think Giraldez is trying to replicate that kind of striker that is more able to associate, to provide on the ball, to play back to goal, in order to, with one first touches, find Caro or find any other player attacking in the spaces. And also a striker that attacks the box, because actually, funny or not, Alexia attacks better the box than probably does Bruna or even Oshuala, because the fact that Alexia has more goal ability to score. And I think he's investing into that. I think in the end, she will come back to the left midfielder positions once Giraldez thinks that she's been adapted, has gained the automatisms as a striker. But for the moment, and considering it's the start of the season, that they are not very fundamental matches that might mean getting out of any competition, he will keep doing that. But coming just to the Valencia match, I think that actually it doesn't matter if she has played as a midfielder or as a striker, because in the end, if you see the heat maps and the match, Alexia played at the same height as Alexia and Mariona, because in the end, there were five players of Barcelona playing against the last line of Valencia. And actually, if you see Alexia, she pretty much had the same movements as Mariona or Aitana. So building a discourse around the nine position of Alexia against Valencia makes not much sense to me. I mean, we can talk about it more generally, whether it's a good idea than for Bruna having more minutes and Oshuala and Salma whenever she comes back. But to be honest, it would have been a very little difference for this match playing as a midfielder, as a striker. Kelsey, yes, tell me how wrong I am, please.
I don't think you're very wrong. I was actually, when we were talking about the whole Esme versus Rolfa and how their abilities differ when they're playing in the left back position, I had a thought, which was, do we think the Alexia false nine striker, whatever experiment, would work better if she had different personnel around her? In the sense of, like, do we think maybe Claudia starting in the place of Mariona would have been better? Or maybe do we think that, you know, Rolfa starting in the place of Esme would have been better? Because you mentioned how we are more productive in our attack when we play Rolfa instead of Esme, because Esme likes to go inside, Rolfa likes to stay to the left. Do you think Rolfa being more creative and generally just like having a better sense of how the team works and the positioning of certain players, maybe the experiment with Alexia would be more successful if there were different people?
That's a good question, but I think rather than Rolfa, probably would be Salma playing as a...
Or Salma, as a left winger.
No, yeah, because in the end, the thing is that we haven't seen teams change. I mean, I think against Madrid CFF and against Valencia, Alexia didn't drop that much like probably Jenny did when she played for Barcelona. She didn't come too deep in order to associate because she couldn't, because Valencia defended with two lines very tight and made no sense to come deep because that produced nothing. But probably whenever we see it against other teams which like to be more aggressive defensively, be more, defending more aggressively, probably we'll notice better the difference of Alexia playing as a false nine, because in that context, she will have more spaces and it will be very helpful coming deeper in order to generate numerical superiorities. In that context, I think Salma will be the best partner for Alexia, because when Alexia comes deeper to associate, and if the center back follows Alexia, Salma, which is very fast and very aggressive with the spaces, might take advantage of that and attack those spaces. Probably in a very similar way, the Wolfsburg game against Barcelona at the Camp Nou on the 21-22 season, what Czernogorcevic did with alongside Jenny, I think that would be, I think would be the best context for Alexia playing as a false nine, as a pure false nine. It would be with Salma. I don't know if that's, I don't know if that can be produced as well with Rolf or other player, but I think it will be the best, because whenever Alexia comes deeper, Salma will attack it. What players do you see with being more helpful for Alexia playing as a false nine?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you're asking me the tactical questions. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here for the comedy.
Wow, but everyone I'm here has for the comedic opinion. Relief. No.
It's the Rivka replacement. Genuinely though, I don't know if I seeing it yesterday, because Esme did play as a left winger yesterday, because Onabati obviously started on the left. I just really didn't see them collaborating very well in that role together.
But probably when the opposition leaves more space, I can see also Esme being close to Alexia and compensated her movements, because Esme produced the most danger when she attacked the channels between the left back and center back, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very aggressive and she reads very well those situations. So yes, it could be very helpful for Alexia as well when she's coming deeper. I think that the name that you mentioned is pretty right.
I did notice when Alexia was playing is that it's so hard to explain when I don't have tactics brain, but there just wasn't enough stuff going on to the left of her. They're like, because obviously Kato was just ball after ball after ball after ball from down that entire right side for the entire match. Well, at least until she was substituted out. She was just on it, everything, the entire time she was on the pitch. And she plays very wide. She plays very wide out to the right. So they don't get too much collaboration when she's just banging in those crosses over and over and over. So I don't know if Kato is necessarily like the player to be able to supply Alexia. I don't quite get the same type of profile as a winger from Esme. She I mean, we've seen her. She goes on the inside. She's more of a inside type of left winger, similar to kind of how Lico used to play, how Mariona plays usually. She's much more comfortable with that, but I feel like that's what a false nine Alexia would need to create that overload in the box. But I can't like quite articulate it, but it's just not there for her. I agree that there probably needs to be a Selma in there who is much more comfortable with being in the box, who is much more comfortable playing with Alexia, at least from what I've seen. You are such... I don't like that you asked me this question because I have thoughts about it, but I can't articulate it because I don't have tactics vocabulary.
Nah, don't worry. But
do you get what I mean, though?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And yeah, the listeners will do as well. One question. In the end, we are just discussing about this Alexia as a false name because he's very saucy. And I don't know, he's become...
There's
the
a lot
discourse.
Of discourse. Jonah's little quip that he gave the other day in that interview, basically where he was like, I know more than you, and I know what I'm doing. I was like, damn, got it. Like, yeah,
but
heard
he's right in the end.
This, got it.
But
he's
yeah,
right. Unfortunately, he's right. He does know what he's doing. And I have reason to trust him because we've gone to 2 Champions League finals in 2 years with him and we've won one of them. So whatever.
Yeah, in the end, don't you think that, I mean, there is a lot of these scars that we are getting into it, but in the end, it will be probably Oshuala and Selma playing.
Isn't that what being a Barcelona fan is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Isn't that just what we do?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, if people are really worried about Alexia playing as a striker and she no longer playing as a midfielder where she won 2 Ballon d'Ors and became the best footballer in the world, I think they
get that anxiety.
Yeah, yeah.
I get that fear.
The thing is, they could come down because we mentioned all these good things about Alexia playing a striker, which I think are very true, but there is one fundamental thing, the fact that Alexia lacks speed. In order to...
She's not as explosive as she was before her ACL tear. That's
not
true.
Even before her ACL, she was not that fast.
The
end, if you want to threaten to the space, you have to be a real threat. Because if you are not a real threat, the opposition, the center backs of the opposition team won't believe your movements. Because, I mean, like, I can leave you 2 meters of advantage, but I will get you in the end. And take, for instance, the game. So I'm sorry if I'm recalling this fucking game every single day, but the Champions League final against Lyon that played as a striker.
That Lyon, match replays in my nightmares. That specific, her specific role, Jenny, as what she did in that match, it's nightmare material. I understand you're processing your trauma. Continue.
No, but I think it's very eloquent of the thing that a striker that lacks that speed makes the opposition defense to defend with a very high line. And Jenny didn't provide anything because she couldn't threaten.
She just lost her speed completely.
Yeah, and Lyon actually made the field very smaller because they defended with a high line and they prevented Barcelona from creating that much alongside the good pressing from Lyon, etc., blah, blah. But the thing is, for a very baseball possession team base, which is Barcelona, for instance, having a striker like Oshuala or Selma or Gaze in the past, who can provide a lot, attacking the space, pinning the center backs, dragging them, and in the end, making the opposition defense to go deeper, makes a huge difference for the midfielders. And Alexia can't do that. And in the end, it will be mainly Selma and Oshuala doing that role because it will be necessary for the rest of the team. And Alexia will be playing there as a midfielder. So I would say people not to worry that much. We are just leaving the start of the season with new tests being made with Esme and Alexia. And in the end, when we play against Real Madrid, most likely she will be playing as starter, as a midfielder.
Probably. Like, eventually, I think Yona has been pretty clear about the fact that this is an experiment. And he's just wanting to see if the time comes where we don't have anyone, which it's not a completely unfounded fear. Because Oshawa is injury prone, we know that. She's also has a tendency, when she's out of form, to be an unreliable striker. We also know that. Bruna is young and inexperienced. We also know that. I mean, Salma can play as a striker, but I don't know if he would necessarily want her to in like a full strength starting 11.
And she's also very injury prone.
That as well.
For this part of her career. I mean, like, when players are very young, they tend to get injured because muscularly they are not developed enough. And in the case of Salma, even more, because he comes from athleticism, a different sport that requires different things. So yeah, I mean.
Right. So that's the whole problem, is that, like, we have players who are very good, but are either inconsistent or injury prone or inexperienced or whatever. You have Alexia, who, I mean, at least before her ACL tear, is none of those things. And she has a known ability to be an incredible goal scorer. So, I mean, if it came down to it, and we played a Champions League final this season, Salma's injured, Oshawa's injured, two very likely probabilities. And Bruna, who I don't know if she'll get enough playing time throughout this season to start in a Champions League final, for example, you know, who do you have? You would have Claudia, I'm sure, but you might also want to start Claudia in that left central midfielder position.
Yeah, probably Mariona could be an option to play as a striker, but in the end, I think the main thing that makes that Yona is not trying her. I mean, we already know what she can deliver, but the fact that she is not such a threat in the box is what probably differentiates her from Alexia and the back-to-goal ability to play.
Right.
So in the end, it's natural because Alexia is more complete as a player. So yeah, I mean, as you said, on the central on the left midfield, you have many options. You mentioned Claudia, Mariona, Alexia, and even Vicky.
Yeah, yeah.
So
with striker, there's also options, but the options aren't nearly as deep or as reliable or as whatever. Maybe we should have signed a world-class striker this window. Maybe we could have done that. I don't know who we would have signed, but that's not my job.
Yeah, the thing is, we are coming from a transfer window where we have talked about we have to fire some players just for the fair play and that I mean, we are having a 2 million surplus, but the thing, the main thing to bring players is that you can register them and have the wage salary within a range. And now Barcelona has it mainly complete. So bringing, I don't know, Ada Heber would have mean, I don't know.
Who is also injury prone? Who is also getting older?
I don't know. You can say Sam Kerr. You have the money to pay because you have 2 million that you can pay to Chelsea to get Sam Kerr. So that would be no problem. But the main problem would be to register her and have it in the team. And that would have mean getting rid of any of the players who are the biggest salary within the team. Alexia, Aitana, Patrick, do you want to get rid of them? Mappy, I don't know. I mean,
yes to all.
Even you could say Walsh, but I don't think Walsh earns 60% of what Sam Kerr does.
Right.
So in the end, is when we have the wage salary ability to sign any of those players, we will see. But this summer, we didn't have it. So
thanks, Bartomeu.
Yep.
Is that all we want to talk about for the Valencia game?
Yeah, I think we are
yeah, okay. I think that's a good place to leave off. All right, thank you guys for listening. Next match we're playing Real Sociedad, and the match after that we're also playing Atleti, right?
Or is that leave you because I'm not sure. Atletico Madrid.
Oh God. Okay, so two very important, very difficult matches happening within
a week
of each other. That'll be interesting. We will see what happens. We also might not see False Nine Alexia come back for the Real Sociedad match, given how big of a match and how important it is. I don't know if Yona would even want to experiment in that match, so that's probably definitely going to be a talking point for the next one. But until then, we will see you on the next one, and thank you for listening.